From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A judge in the case of suspected shooter Travis Ryan King has responded to public outrage over a $2 million bond and decided to revoke the bond. Ryan King has been held in the case of a brutal mass shooting at a Waffle House eatery in Antioch, Tennessee, that claimed the lives of four black and brown patrons. He used an AR-15 rifle, which was wrested away by an unarmed bystander, and then fled until police managed to capture him alive. He was previously arrested trying to enter the White House and has been found to be a member of an anti-government group of people that consider themselves, quote, sovereign citizens. Meanwhile, at another Waffle House in the neighboring state of Alabama, a black woman was brutally arrested by multiple male police officers in an incident that was captured on video. Chickasia Clemens was not only wrestled to the ground, but was partially disrobed by officers and threatened to have her arm broken. At one point in the video, an officer can be seen attempting to strangle her. The Saraland Police Department said her treatment was justified. The two Waffle House incidents come right after two black men were arrested at a Philadelphia Starbucks for doing absolutely nothing, and five black women playing golf in Pennsylvania had the cops called on them after being accused of playing too slowly. My guest is Malina Abdullah, professor and chair of the Department of Pan-African Studies at the California State University of Los Angeles. She's an active member of the Los Angeles chapter of Black Lives Matter. Welcome to the program, Malina.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So two different Waffle House incidents to discuss here in two neighboring states. Let's start with the more violent one in Tennessee near Nashville in Antioch, the Waffle House incident with the brutal mass shooting of these four people at and the suspected shooter I had mentioned had his bond revoked after people were outraged. Why is this incident not being called either an act of terrorism or a hate crime?
Well, we know why. We know why it's not being called an act of terrorism or a hate crime. We know why, he was on the loose for a day before they captured him. We know why. It's because the victims were black and brown and because the perpetrator was white. And we see this as a pattern over and over and over again when white, violent white extremists attack black folks and people of color. They are given empathy. And on the flip side, the black victims are often not. They are not elevated. And so that's what we saw happen at the Waffle House massacre when this person who was disturbed, right, but was also clearly targeting black folks and brown folks and clearly, you know, engaged in a mass killing of black and young black and brown folks. You know, their lives were not valued and his life was.
Right. I mean, if we'd seen the script flipped with a black or brown or Muslim or all of the above shooter and mostly white victims, then we'd have not just a huge coverage, the terrorism word being invoked, but of course you would have had President Trump talk about it all over his Twitter feed. And he has been shockingly silent, I guess not shockingly silent, but he has been entirely silent on this incident.
Right. And we know that Travis Ryan King saw himself as a friend of Trump, right? He tried to gain access to the White House, said that he had a meeting with President Trump, and, you know, had kind of aligned himself that way. What's interesting is we don't hear a lot coming out about his social media profile. We don't hear a lot coming out about any ties that he might have had to organizations. We know that, like you said, if the script were flipped, if this were someone black who killed a bunch of white folks or someone Muslim who killed a bunch of white folks, it would have automatically been seen as terrorism. We'd hear all about their political leanings, not just their mental health backgrounds.
Right. The person who was who sort of wrestled the gun out of the AR-15 out of Ryan King's hands was, is being seen rightly so as a hero. What's also interesting about this story is that it undermines that standard NRA and Trump narrative that what we need is more guns in our society because it takes a good guy with a gun to stop a bad guy with a gun. In this case, we had an unarmed good guy bravely risk his life and stop a bad guy. And it's just really interesting that there's been deafening silence on that.
Absolutely. And we know that the NRA is not a gun rights organization. The NRA is a white supremacist organization. The NRA has never stood up for the Second Amendment rights of Black people. They were silent in the murder of Philando Castile. They were silent in the murder of John Crawford. And so the NRA is veiling themselves as a gun rights organization, when in actuality, they're a white supremacist organization. And so that's why we don't hear the hero in this story being exalted, right? We don't hear much about him except from alternative media, right? Mm-hmm. So we, in non-corporate media are absolutely, heralding him, but corporate media is not.
Right.
And
James,
of course,
Shaw
Trump
Jr.
is
his name.
Right.
So it's interesting. The police managed to capture the suspected shooter, Travis Ryan King, alive, took him to a hospital before booking him, and then the judge issued a $2 million bond, which basically means that if the guy could have, or his family or friends could have come up with something like 10% of that, he literally could have been walking free until his trial, and it was only after a lot of phone calls came in that that bond was revoked. Meanwhile, all an African-American person needs to do to get killed in a hail of bullets is maybe wave a cell phone around, or not even that, just sit in a car in a parking lot.
Right. Well, what was really striking to me, one, when you said they took him to the hospital, I was waiting to hear reports of them taking him to Burger King, like they did with Dylann Roof, right?
Yeah.
And, we often have these white mass murderers. They're almost always captured alive. We can think about Dylann Roof. We can think about Nicholas Cruz in Florida. We can also think about Travis Ryan King, even Timothy McVeigh. Right. If we think about them being captured alive, right, their lives being valued. One of the things that we can think about with Travis Ryan King and the whole narrative about mental health and this idea that, he, who everyone knows is a mass murderer, should be thought of as innocent until proven guilty and, be given a bond. Right. I was thinking about how that contrasts with the lives of people like Grishario Mack, who was murdered in the middle of the Crenshaw Mall without even, they didn't even evacuate the mall first. The mall was crowded, right? And he supposedly had a mental health condition and a kitchen knife, had not attacked anyone with the kitchen knife, just had one. And they kill him in a hail of bullets in front of children, mothers, shoppers, workers, right? I think about Kenneth Ross, who was murdered in a Gardena Park. This is all in the weeks leading up to this, right? So April 10th and April 11th are these killings, right? Kenneth Ross was killed. He also had a mental health challenge, bipolar schizophrenic, killed in the middle of a Gardena Park at 2:40 in the afternoon because they heard gunshots in the area, and they're giving no other explanation to these murders. So when Black people have mental health conditions, serious mental health conditions that are not, and they are not a danger to the public, they're still killed by police, right? They're not arrested and given bond as Travis Ryan King is. But when white folks, of course he's mentally disturbed, right? We see his whole track record, but he also killed people. They are given empathy, they are captured alive, and even given bond where he could have been a danger to more people. We know that had it not been for the bravery of the patron of the Waffle House, that he would have killed more folks, that it's only because of the intervention of the brother that he didn't kill more people.
Now, interestingly enough, right after the Waffle House shooting in Tennessee, there was an incident in Toronto, Canada, where a man named Alec Minasian was found, who essentially mowed a van into a crowded street, killing more than 10, about 10 people, I believe. And he essentially seemed to be wanting to commit suicide by cop. He raised his cell phone as if it was a gun, and the Canadian police did not shoot him. And the Washington Post had an interesting piece about this entitled, "How Do You Capture a Mass Killer Suspect Without Firing a Shot? Ask Toronto Police." And I don't know if it's too much to sort of romanticize the Canadian police, but they seem to have far fewer police shootings in the U.S. And in this Washington Post piece, it went into detail about how Canadian police are trained to de-escalate situations without using violence, whereas our cops seem to turn to violence before, you know, anything else, except perhaps when there's a white mass shooter involved.
Right, absolutely. So our police do know how to de-escalate. They do know how to preserve life, right? Yeah. But they only value the lives of white suspects,
or they seem
right?
To, yeah.
And and so that's what we saw. They did do that with Travis Ryan King, right? They have done that in the past. They did do that. There was a white man with a machete in a park the day after they murdered Kenneth Ross in the park, who was unarmed, right? There was a white man with a machete who actually came at the police, and they were able to capture him, according to reports, without a scratch, right? They used non-lethal force. But when Black people are the suspects, and what we also need to interrogate, what are they suspected of, right? Suspected of having mental health conditions, right? We hear backlash not only from the police who try to assassinate their characters, right? So we hear Rosario Mack deserved, this is their narrative, not ours, right? But deserved what he got, is what they say, because he had a mental health condition. But that is not the same argument that's used when the so-called suspect is white. And I'm saying so-called because I don't know what Rosario Mack is suspected of doing, because he didn't attack anyone, and it was a kitchen knife, which is not illegal, right? The so-called suspect, they're not given the right to life as white suspects
so,
are.
So, Melina, let's talk about the other Waffle House in Alabama. So interesting, of course, that the shooting in Tennessee and this particular incident we're about to talk about, both happening at Waffle Houses. In this particular case, an African-American woman, Chikazia Clemens, was arrested by multiple male cops. The video of her arrest captured on tape, absolutely horrific. We're going to play a tiny clip of it. It has been blurred to protect her privacy because she was literally partially disrobed. One could argue, you know, that it amounted to a sexual assault of these
right.
three cops wrestling her down. There's claims that she was inebriated, but she was unarmed. I'm sure you've seen this incident, and it just was very disturbing to watch. What do you make of it?
So with Miss Clemens, I'm saddened. I want to get to a state of rage, but I'm also, so I'm infuriated and saddened. I'm not yet able to kind of subdue my own sadness around it, because when we think about what happens to Black women and the silence of the media, the silence of many in the activist community, the silence of our elected officials on it, it saddens me as a Black woman, right? You know, Malcolm X famously has a statement about the most abused being in this world being the Black woman, right? And Zora Neale Hurston says, Black women are the mules of the world, right? I don't think much has changed since those quotes were made, right? When we think about Ms. Clemens and we contrast it with what happened, the injustice that happened to the brothers in Philadelphia when Starbucks called the police on them for not ordering, for supposedly loitering as they were waiting for a friend to arrive, which is what people do in Starbucks, right? So Starbucks was absolutely wrong, right? What happened in that Waffle House with Sister Clemens, and I hope people watch the entire video as well as read news articles on it, amounted, in my view, absolutely to an assault, to a sexual assault, and to the complete dehumanization of her. So the story is her story, and I always believe the stories of the community over the stories of the police, is that she asked for plasticware with her order. And they attempted to charge her an extra 50 cents for plasticware. She pushed back on that and they got nasty with her. She asked for the number to the corporate headquarters and was waiting for them to give her a business card so she could escalate her complaint. She was sitting there calmly, people will see it in the video, waiting on that, and the police come in and grab her. And she responds, "You're not gonna grab on me like that. Why are you grabbing on me?" And it was 2 o'clock in the morning, Waffle House, for people who are unaware, a lot of folks go to Waffle House after they go out for the evening, right? So she was dressed in an outfit that indicates she was probably out for the evening. They grabbed her, they threw her to the floor, her breasts are exposed, her dress comes up, and they just treat her as if she's not a human being. So what we need to think about is, why is there not a call for a boycott of the Waffle House? Or why is there not a loud call for a boycott of the Waffle House, right? Because just as Starbucks unjustly called the police on the brothers in Philadelphia, Waffle House unjustly called the police on Sister Clemens.
And then there were the five black women playing golf in Pennsylvania that also had the cops called on them because they were apparently playing too slow for the other white patrons. I mean, we hear story after story after story.
Story after story after story. I want to say one more thing about the Waffle House and abuse of Sister Clemens, is they doubled down on calling the police. So rather than say this was wrong, we apologize, and her family and friends are calling for an apology, I'm saying much more is required than an apology, right? Rather than saying we're sorry that shouldn't have happened to this woman, right? That we violated her human dignity. The Waffle House doubled down and said their employee did nothing wrong. So black people who are regular patrons of the Waffle House, the boycott needs to start with us. Mm-hmm. And anybody who cares about black life needs to make sure they never set foot in a Waffle House, which allows for and condones and goes ahead and says that the abuse of black women at the hands of the police by their calling is justified. And so, yes, you're right, this is a pattern that's happening throughout the country, right? Police called on us. We're also, one of the things that I've been lifting up is that people need to just stop calling police on black people. You don't know what will happen, right? We know that the police are not our friends. They see us with a target on our backs. When we look at the rate of police killings now, right, it's surged since Trump has taken office. So this year is far higher number of police killings at the hands of police, black people being killed at the hands of police than in the year prior. And so people who claim to care about black life need to stop calling the police on black people.
Right.
In each of these incidents, they could have done something without police intervention.
Right. People need to be aware that if you call the cops on a black person, you could be signing that person's death warrant, literally. And that is the state of America today. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. So two calls. Don't go to Waffle House. Make it clear why you're not going to Waffle House. And I know we're in California, but tell your friends in the South where there's lots of Waffle Houses, we should never be seen in a Waffle House, right? Mm-hmm. Number two, don't call the police on black people. Don't call the police, period, right? We need to get back to a holistic view of public safety. Think about what could have happened in each of those incidents, right? Black people have a right to wait for their friend in Starbucks because everybody does it, right? Black women have a right to ask for plasticware when they are patronizing a business, right? Black women have the right to play golf at their own pace. And so those are things we can think about. And if something needs to be said, like, I know there's a golf etiquette, can I play through? If you felt like the Black women's team was going too slow, you can just ask, can you move ahead? Those are things that can be done where you recognize the humanity of our being.
Melina, I want to thank you as always for joining us today and sharing your insights with our audience. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
Melina Abdullah is a professor and chair of the Department of Pan-African Studies, California State University of Los Angeles, an active member of the Los Angeles chapter of Black Lives Matter. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.